Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Got a lot to talk about today with our guest, Kevin Scott Collier, is joining us. His new book, Rudolph Valentino's Strange Afterlife. Plus, he's had experiences and has written considerable amount about the paranormal. It's a pleasure to have you join me. Thanks a lot for being here today, Kevin.
Hey, thanks, Dave, for having me in the show. Very nice.
Well, I love when there's books out regarding the supernatural and celebrities and some of the ties, and this book has been brought to my attention and just came out on Thanksgiving, and I thought it'd be a great time to catch up with you and find out a little bit about this. Rudolph Valentino's Strange Afterlife. Now, I didn't even realize that there was a history surrounding Valentino. I've actually been to his grave a few times, and it's just kind of an interesting place to be, but that you've got this book with all these other great encounters. What drew you to tell his story?
Well, I've written quite a few books on silent era film, and I was fascinated with the legends and myths that go with Valentino himself, and about him, you know, coming back as a ghost and haunting his former residence, which was Falcon Lair. And I started to research it just to see what articles were coming out in entertainment magazines at the time he died, you know, right when after he died, within the next, you know, decade. You know, what were the media saying about it, and what were people saying about it? So I kind of put those stories together in the book. So I'm really compiling stories for the book rather than writing the story myself.
Right, just kind of bringing the library of all of this knowledge that's already out there. Had you, now, in the vein of celebrity ghosts, you know, we've heard quite a bit of stories of Marilyn Monroe and you know, of course, George Reeves, the original Superman, and some of their famous hauntings. You know, Rudolph Valentino, talk to us a little bit about him. For a lot of our listeners that are younger and have no clue who Rudolph Valentino is, it's a shame to hear that, but tell us a little bit about Valentino and his life and career.
Well, he was a big star, very big star in the silent film era. You know, he was comparable to the biggest actors today. And part of the fascination with him, of course, was that he died so young. And when he died, he died quite suddenly. People didn't expect it. I detail that a little bit in the book. But the whole thing is, it seems to me that just about any famous actor, there's a myth or a legend or something going on behind them about how their ghost is haunting. I mean, I guess, you know, Hollywood's a really busy place if you consider the ghosts that are out there.
Right.
But Valentino was... I wasn't a big fan of Valentino because he's a romantic type, you know, a leading man and all that. But he was just very famous. He became more famous after he died, but he was famous when he died. And a lot of people made this pilgrimage out to his crypt. And part of the book has the journal of the cryptkeeper, the groundskeeper that was out there, and he kept track for about 5 years of who was showing up at Valentino's final resting place and what they were doing. And some of it was quite peculiar. Ladies dressed in black going out there and acting strange, and people conducting seances right out there by his crypt, you know, trying to raise his spirit. And I think the funniest one in the book, it's not even paranormal, but it's supernatural, you could almost call it. A woman went out there, and she claimed to be carrying Valentino's baby. And she hadn't delivered the child yet, but it was 13 months after Valentino's death, so... I don't think it was his kid.
Not unless he's got the capability to hold on to that baby like a mother elephant.
Right.
Wow. Yeah, so, Alacona, what ended up killing Valentino?
You know, I can't exactly remember.
And when he died, I mean, it had an impact, right? That was a huge ripple effect.
Yeah, it did. It really did. His funeral was attended by over 100,000 people. I know that. And he had actually two funerals. One was in New York, and the other one was in California. And, yeah, a lot of people were heartbroken about it. I mean, everybody in the industry showed up. He died on August 23rd, 1926. And he was only 31 when he died. And... there was mass hysteria when he died. I mean, some women committed suicide because, you know, they loved him so much and they couldn't believe it. And then there's his cause of death was, let me see if I can remember here. Let's see. Oh, he went into the hospital on August 15th and 1926. And... he just eventually what killed him was he just lapsed into a coma as a result of ulcers and appendicitis, and it just kind of just escalated from there, where he became so ill he just didn't recover. You know, of course, modern medicine would take care of that.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of people that would have survived. You know what they had back then, but and there seemed to be a lot of actors and actresses that were going through. A lot of tragedy back then, too, because, and it was actually involved in the film industry because there was no safety precautions. You know, one guy, an actor that did a stunt in 1915, drove a wagon by accident off a cliff, and he died. And another lady named Martha Mansfield died in on Thanksgiving Day, 1923, when her hoop skirt caught on fire, and she burned to death. It's during the making of a movie. So, you know, there was all these tragic deaths that were associated with vaudeville in Hollywood during the time. And, you know, and it was during the spiritual movement, too. There was a resurgence of the spiritual movement where people were doing the seance stuff again and trying to communicate with the dead on the other side. So, you know, anybody that came out and said, well, I think I saw Rudolph Valentino walking around by his crypt, you know, then it attracted more people to the site, and, you know, it's going to, you know, but I follow, Dave, I've found out that at the center of every myth or legend is truth. There's something there where it started. And with Valentino, it was just, I think people just couldn't get over him. But 10 years after his death, he was all but forgotten, basically. You know,
yeah, isn't that strange?
He never went into the talking pictures.
Right, yeah, he had just gone before the talkies really kind of lit up. And they said, now you said what, there was like 100,000 people that lined the streets in Manhattan to kind of pay their respects for this funeral. They even had riots that erupted.
Yes, they did. There was riots in the streets over right there. There were people jumping out of buildings. Like I said, women committed suicide.
And wasn't there a rumor... wasn't there a rumor at some point that the body on display was not even that of Rudolph Valentino? They were keeping that secluded.
Well, that was one of the rumors, but there was, you know, there's no truth to it because he was, you know, lying out there, and it was definitely him. There's pictures that exist. I've run one or two in the book, and it's clearly him and all these people that knew him personally that were actors, producers, and members of the Hollywood establishment went in there to view the body anyway. So, and there's nobody on record saying, hey, I know that guy. That's Mickey Wilson. That isn't Rudolph
right.
Valentino. You know, or that's his double. That's Hitler's double there. That's not really Hitler. So, you know, none of that came up. Not at all. So it was him that got buried. Well, not buried, put in the crypt, in a vault, in a wall. Now, you've been there, right?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, he's still next to a lady that loaned him the crypt. And when he, Valentino died, he didn't have any burial plans. He's only 31. So a friend of his said, well, you know, I've got this crypt available. I'm divorced. And it was for my ex-husband, but he's not getting it now. We can put Rudy in there.
Right.
So they did. And Rudy never moved from there. He's still there.
Isn't that fascinating? And that is. But I know when I was there, I'd gone to take a picture next to the crypt and had put my hand on the plate, and the entire plate shifted and fell backwards into the crypt itself. And I was like, "Yeah, all right, I'm getting out of here." That's all I needed was for the cops are knocking on my door for it. But that was a cool moment to just kind of be there and realize all of the people. Now they've said that they've seen reportedly his ghost walking around the grounds.
Yeah,
they've seen. Wasn't there a famous woman in black who would show up and would leave?
Eventually, a couple, and they
right.
identified her. I think I say in the book who it is. But there was another woman in black that followed the first one, and she just kind of vanished. But, you know, the crypt keeper out there, he tried to keep track of who these people was. You know, he was friendly, you know, unless they were doing some vandalism. He spoke to them and made conversation and was sympathetic to some of them. But, you know, people still claim to see his ghost today, which is crazy. How would you know it's him?
Where is he most prevalent? Is it...
Yeah.
Where is he most prevalent? Is it by his graveside? Is it in his old homes? Where would you see him now? Where are most of the claims?
I don't even know if Falcon Lair still exists, his former mansion, which people said that was haunted. I got one story in the book that somebody slept overnight there that was a reporter about 3 years after Valentino died. And, you know, she gives a report. And, you know, back then writers liked to embellish things. They liked to make something dramatic, because a lot of them were stringers, and they're just trying to sell the article to the magazine. But I think there's a lot of truth to what was going on, too, with Valentino's afterlife image there. I'm not sure exactly what people were seeing, but they were claiming that it was the man. So, you know, who knows? And there's still sightings that still go on today out in California, you know, in Hollywood area. You know, and especially where he's buried. So,
right. It's fascinating that you were able to get the notes from the crypt keeper. Would the crypt keeper ever talk about ghostly sightings himself, or just what other people had reported?
He never mentioned anything. Now, the crypt keeper actually, he wrote a book. He published a book that had his notes about the Valentino visits, and his book was published in 1938. But I went back to the original report. Where he supplied his notes to a reporter in 1932. So that was about 6 years earlier that a magazine met with him, and they excerpted some of his notes and basically what he had to say about Valentino grave visitations. And I don't know if the guy's book is still in print. Obviously, he's dead. He's been gone a long time. But a lot of people go to that book and use parts of that for biographies on Valentino. And I was a little reluctant to even do a book on Valentino. Like I said, I'm not a big fan of his. It's, you know, I'm into comedy when it comes to silent films. And the deal is, too, with Valentino is there's a million books out there. You know, there are. So I thought, well, if I'm going to do one, then I'm going to do one that's a little bit different. Make it affordable, number one, because people don't want to buy a $30 hardcover book. Unless you're really into it, you know?
Right.
And keep it brief, keep it simple, and kind of put out the cliff notes of what this paranormal stuff with Valentino was, how it started, and, you know, why it might still be going on.
Why do you think, out of all of it, why do you think Valentino's ghost would still represent? Is it because he was eventually forgotten after being such a big part of it, or do you think it's more along the lines of just the, you know, the power of what he is and what he represents? You say Valentino, and people that don't know and haven't actually seen his movie, they still know what you're referring to. So that's a pretty amazing legacy. Yeah, right.
Sure, you know, you get throw out that one word, and you got this whole image, you know. So whether you've seen the films or not, you know, you've heard of them. So I think part of the idea of Valentino's afterlife is that during the period after his death, you know, decades of fall, you know, people still remembered him. They remembered going to the movies. Some were still personal friends that were living. And they couldn't get over it. So maybe they were seeing what they wanted to see. And the other part of it is, if you know, the aspect of if it's real, if it really is a ghost or an apparition of Valentino, that you know, paranormal people have suggested that perhaps because he died so young at 31, that he wasn't finished with his mission, and he's still out there. He's wandering around, and he doesn't even know that he's gone. So that's possible.
Now, did you find and were you able to uncover, as you're kind of going through this, other celebrity ghost sightings that you were kind of surprised to hear about?
Well, there's not too many that I can really, you know, focus on or remember off the top of my head. But, you know, there's a lot of that going on. Like Zach Bagans, in one of his ghost adventure shows, went out to, I think it was either the Hollywood Museum or some club where all the Hollywood people went to, and there were a lot of people reported seeing many celebrities that are deceased in those facilities. So, I don't know.
Well, talk to me about, I know you've written about a considerable amount about other things aside from this, you know, and you've spoken to eyewitnesses from things like the Michigan Dogman. When did your fascination with the kind of the supernatural, the paranormal and things start to take hold for you?
Well, when I was a kid, I'm 60 years old now, 60-year-old kid. But when I was young, there was a comic strip in the newspaper called, it was a single panel, you know, usually they broke it up into a couple different panels, but it was Ripley's Believe It or Not, which, for me, I thought it was just a comic, turned out to be a book series and a big deal. And I was always fascinated with these claims or these stories that seem supernatural, that seem too fake to be real, and you know, believe it or not, they're real. So that kind of fascinated me, and so I started to, probably about 12 years ago, get into researching paranormal researching. So it's like, I'm not the guy with the EVP device and the night vision camera, and I go into the places and investigate. No, I want to talk to people that have seen something. So I'm kind of a reporter on that and written a couple of local books on hauntings and UFOs and cryptids and just bizarre, strange history. I mean, I can tell you one story that's really bizarre.
Please do.
Well, I live in Ottawa County, Michigan, and Ottawa County is one of 83 counties in the state of Michigan, and it is the most conservative Christian county you can live in. In fact, the last time a Democrat running for the office of the presidency one Ottawa County was in 1864 with George McClellan running against Abraham Lincoln when Lincoln won a second term. So, you know, for the last 150 years, no Democrat running for president has won this county. They even joke you could put a dog on the Republican ticket in a local election, it would win. So, but one of the stories from our county is, there was a man who went walking. He worked at a lumber yard, I guess. And his name was, I can go into the story and I'll remember his name. But he was working at this, like, lumber yard. It was about 1907. He got hit in the head with a board. And he's wandering off in the snow, and they find him. And his name was Monroe Ruddy. But he stumbled into a homeless place, like a poor farm, you know, where they take people in. And he didn't know who he was. And he just said that, I worked at steel plant or steel woodworks or something like that. And there was a factory not too far away. So they named him after that. They said, okay, we'll just call you Joe Steele. Well, he went into there in 1907. And in the 1960s, you know, Joe's getting up there. He's almost 100 years old. And a local newspaper does an article on him. And it's called The Man Without an Identity. Nobody knows who he is. He stumbled into the poor farm. They've taken care of him ever since. He works there. He's become like a family member there. They run his picture, put it in the newspaper. some distant relative, cousins or something, recognize the guy and come out. So it's like 1967. This guy went in there, or 1970 or something. Joe actually, Monroe Ruddy, Joe alias Joe Steele, they called him, lived to be 110, 115, one of the oldest people in Michigan history. And for over 60 years, like 64 years, he was a man without an identity. And then his family, like maybe his grandkids or something, recognize a picture in the newspaper, you know, and say, well, I know that guy. And then they show up and he's reunited with his family. But there's a lot of weird stories like that. So those kind of stories fascinate me that, you know, it sounds a little too strange to be true.
Well, talk to me. I know people are fascinated by the Michigan Dogman stories, and you've written and talked about them as well. When you hear a claim like this, first of all, does it send off alarms to you? Does it sound just too impossible to be true, or does that kind of excite you into the possibilities of what if?
You know, it's really strange because I look at this as I'm going to talk to the person and interview them, and I'm looking for... I don't put it onto me where I go, well, you know, it's whether I believe him or not. Now, do I believe he believes what he saw? And then I evaluate it from there, you know, because people are seeing things. And so, like when I met with the guy, him and his friend saw the Michigan Dogman, 1994, 95, in a nature preserve, not too far from where I lived. And he described him, and, you know, it was like 7 feet tall, you know, hairy, claws. He saw him twice with his friend. And then there's an earlier sighting, too, before 94, in the 80s or late 70s. So this other guy saw the dog man out in the nature preserve, too. And then there's a rumor, you know, that a vehicle hit a creature on a side road in our county, and it's demolished the car, and there's scratch marks all over the hood, and the guy didn't know what he hit. You know, it was strange. It was like something he'd never seen before, but he didn't describe it. And so, you know, I met with a fella at a pizza place because he didn't want to talk on the phone or anything. He's like, can I meet you? It's like a secret meeting, so... I felt like putting on a trench coat, you know, and a detective hat. And I sat there and I listened to his story. But I believe he saw something. Now, I've never seen it. Do I know if it's true or not? I don't know. I think a lot of this is demonic. You know, there's a lot of these creatures of legend that surface that people see. And the more the legend grows, the more people tend to see it. There is a one crazy story is the melon heads. Now, they have melon heads in other states, which are these little people that have big heads, and they're like feral creatures that look like kids, and they live underground. Now, there's a whole story that I traced down on that in a location about 30 miles from here, south of where I live. And because there's this legend of the melon heads, that there was a scientist or a doctor that used this, like, youth home to experiment on children. And when it went awry and went crazy, he just unleashed them into the woods. And eventually they tunneled underground and they lived. It sounds really, really far-fetched. But so people are tipping me off to that and they're saying, what do you know about the melon heads? Well, I don't know anything about melon heads, so I look into it. And eventually, like I said, there's a little bit of truth to every myth or legend. I found out that the facility wasn't housing, like, children, like orphans or anything. It was actually a seminary, and there was kids going there, you know, learning about faith and all that, and they were harassed by the other local kids. Because the other locals that lived in the area, was kind of a poor area, would look at the young kids all dressed up in their white shirts and ties and going to their religious school. And they became, I talked to a couple people back in the 1950s that remember this. And they say, well, we used to say that they, you know, were big, they were brainy kids. So they had big heads. And when we started calling them melon heads, because there was.
So were they referring to like the hydrocephalic people, the people?
Yeah,
that,
yeah. Right. Well, you know, that's what you think of when you think of the creature.
Right.
But, you know, it's like, where did the origin of it come from? Well, it came from these poor kids going to public school, seeing the kids going to the seminary, and they were all dressed up, and they were supposed to be real brainy. You know, like, they're special. Oh, they're going to a special school. Oh, they're really brainy. They got huge brains. They got huge heads. Hey, why don't we call them melon heads? So, you know, it goes from making fun of privileged kids to a subterranean feral monster. So you never know. Never know.
Right. It's always weird to watch and kind of trace the genesis of these stories as they evolve. Now, you did a show for quite a while on the demonic and kind of battling demons. What drew you to that aspect of it? I mean, that's kind of the darker, creepier underbelly of this whole thing.
Well, I think it's actually like the what you're seeing on the surface with most paranormal and supernatural researchers is they're looking at the tip of the iceberg. You know, it's ain't the Titanic, but you know what's underneath could sink a thousand Titanics.
Right,
and it's to me. I look at everything paranormal and supernatural from a biblical perspective, because you're going to find your demons, you're going to find angels, you're going to find all this, and it's all operating in the supernatural. A lot of people, they look at the whole religious aspect. Some of them are Christians, some of them aren't, but they fail to realize that's where supernatural stuff occurs, and it goes on every day. And down here on Earth, unfortunately, it is the demonic. And an affirmation of this, which I find is very interesting the last few years, is, like, as an example, Ghost Adventures. These shows used to be, you know, years ago when they first came on, a decade or so, you know, they're chasing around the spirit of some old man or trying to get him on a thermal camera or whatever, and they're attributing it to, you know, oh, it's just the old man that was killed in this house. We're looking for him. Hey, Jed, are you here? Are you here? You know? And now, even Zach Bagans, and when things get a little serious, he calls in a priest. When things get a little out of hand, he calls it demonic. You know, he had a show on Zach Bagans about demonic objects. You know, so you're hearing, instead of ghost, you're hearing demonic a lot more. And really, that's where all this stuff originates from. And, you know, it's all connected together. It is, because the supernatural realm is an unseen realm, but it is real. And when the closer you get to it, the devil, the enemy, the evil one, the demon, does not like to be outed, because he's a creature of deception, and he operates freely on Earth, doing pretty much anything he can trick people into doing. And he doesn't like to be outed. He doesn't like to be. It's kind of like if you went to a class reunion, there's somebody that comes in there, he buys everybody drinks, and it's been 30 years since you graduated. He's kind of big, he's kind of sloppy, but, you know, he's worth a lot of money, he's, you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, it's like that person, they come in there, and they dominate, and they get the attention. Now, the devil, But you're looking at the guy at the class reunion, and you're going, well, I know who you are, though. I actually saw you working at the gas station on the way here. I know you've been divorced 3 times. You can't even stay married. You know, even your mother threw you out of the basement, whatever. And it's like, that guy ain't going to like me if he knows that I know what he is. He's not going to like me. He's going to see me at that class reunion, and he's going to go, oh, I just saw Kevin at the gas station. And he overheard me talking about how my mom threw me out. I've divorced, and I'm only working part-time, and who knows what else. So the second I walk in the room, that guy is going to feel uncomfortable because he knows I got his number. And the deal is with the evil side that operates here on Earth through dimensional portals or whatever they are, is the closer you understand or get to him, and I don't mean about worshiping him. I've known some people who are practicing Satanists. I know ministers and preachers, evangelists, that have had the devil try to kill them, kill their family. One evangelist in Australia told me that the devil spoke to him in a dream and said, if you get off of me, if you leave me alone in your preaching, I won't bother your church. I'll leave you alone. And, you know, everybody's coming up with that, too, that, you know, well, I saw things in a dream. If you look at Christian TV today, you know, it seems like the whole thing is prophecy and end times. And the deal is they're all talking about, well, I had a dream. And in my dream I saw fires and I saw earthquakes. Well, guess what? That could be today. That could be tomorrow. That could be the next day. You know, what's prophetic about that? But the devil here on earth, though, the closer you get to him and understand how he operates and understand he's a deceiver, the more he's going to be after you to destroy you. And I personally know people that has happened to. One guy, John Ramirez, was a practicing Satanist for 25 years. And he became a Christian, but he came out with several books where he talked about working for the devil, you know, working for evil. And it's shocking. And it's like, well, that's kind of sensational there. But then let's go to Dr. Robert Bennett's books. He's a former minister or a practicing minister in a Lutheran faith. He's written two books called I'm Afraid. I think it's Afraid and I Am Not Afraid. And in there, he deals strictly with demonic possessions and people who are possessed by demons and people who are possessed by evil and how to remedy it. And you know what? It isn't like you got to buy a book to figure this out either. In fact, I had a friend that had a neighbor that was suffering from a demonic possession. And his roommate or his wife or something ran over to my friend's house and said, something's going on, Jeff. It's, you know, this and that. Jeff grabbed his Bible. He went over there. He did some things over the guy. And it stopped. You know, he was foaming at the mouth, doing all this weird stuff. And Jeff and I have talked about that a few times. And I talked to Robert Bennett about it, the author that wrote the books on exorcism. You know, they're really excellent books. And he said, well, you know, amateurs shouldn't go out trying this kind of stuff. But there are certain things that you can do to stop the demonic. And so it works. So I know I've rambled on a lot here, but the whole paranormal thing and supernatural thing is directly linked to the demonic. It's
you don't believe. So, do you believe that ghosts then are not truly just the disincarnate souls of the bodies that we once inhabited? Do you believe that they are the demonic realm taking these shapes, trying to confuse, confound, and possibly win over people so that they can begin the oppression and possession?
See, that's what is the big question. Now, I think it's possible that ghosts come about through the original individual because of demonic intervention. Maybe the devil is behind this, bringing it back, having the person come back, having the essence of the spirit come back. It's a really hard call to make on that particular subject because when it comes to the demonic, I talked to a fellow named Josh Pack about this, and he runs a show on streaming TV called Into the Multiverse. And I asked him one time, I said, Josh, where do you think the devil lives? Where does he live? And he said, I think it might be another dimension. And that kind of makes sense with what the background is, from a biblical viewpoint, is that it's about these unseen realms. You know, the war is not of flesh and blood, but by principalities and these things that we can't see. And he deals in quantum physics and multidimensional things. And I think that's where the paranormal is a lot of the time. It can slip in and out of that. Now, like I said, I've never seen a ghost myself, UFOs, monsters, you know, I had a demonic experience, but it's you know, it's hard to say. But I think
don't just roll over you had a demonic experience and make it sound so matter of fact here. We need to know about that. I want to know what happened to you. We'll talk about that in a few moments. We'll be back with more of the best in Paranormal Talk Radio right after this.
Beyond the Darkness.
We're back. This is Beyond the Darkness. And I want to remind everybody out there that you can get the complete Paranormal Challenge DVD set, the entire, I think it's 13, 14 episodes in one signed box set. I was the lead judge on that along with Zach Bagans on the Travel Channel. I've only got about 25 of the complete sets available. It's $30. That includes your shipping right here in the continental United States. So if you're interested in ordering an autographed copy set from Darkness Dave, all you have to do is send me an email, dave@darknessradio.com, and I will connect you, get an invoice out to you, and we will be shipping these sometime in the next 7 to 10 business days. So get on that if you'd like to get the complete mini series of Paranormal Challenge that was featured on the Travel Channel. I'll get them out right away. And for our books from the guests and topics that we talk about, like today's topic, Rudolph Valentino's Strange Afterlife, we've got a link up to that book. All you have to do is go to darknessradio.com. Click on the Killer Deals link. You'll see that book and all of the other books that we cover so that you never miss any of the great topics, great books or movies, any of the documentaries, anything that we talk about. Plus, there's some great ghost hunting equipment and more right on that page. And every time you make a purchase from that page, a very small percentage goes to help keep us afloat, pay for our administrative costs and everything else. So no matter what you do, use that link, whether you're going to go in and buy stuff that you're looking for or the stuff that's on our page. And that'll be a great way for you to help support Dave and Tim with our venture here with Beyond the Darkness. We're talking with Kevin Scott Collier. Kevin, you drop a bomb on me and then just kind of walk away from it. I'd face the demonic. Anyway, how about those bears? I want to hear about your experience. What do you mean when you said that you had a demonic experience?
Well, I've had a few demonic experiences. Some of them are quite trivial, but they're real. And this is the kind of stuff I used to watch on TV, you know, interviews like this, and listen to, you know, like a decade ago, and I'd go, "That guy's nuts." Okay, right? You know, and so I was a non-believer, but you know, when you personally experience it, you know it's real. And the other thing is, I'm always suspect of people too that have very popular television shows, or you know, where they're making a really good living at this, and There's an extreme financial benefit behind it. So they're going to see a few more ghosts, or they're going to see, you know, whatever. But I don't have the vested interest. You know, I don't make that much money on my books. You know, buys a pizza every now and then. That's nice. But, I had demonic experiences. As an example, as some minor ones. My wife and I were shooting, doing some video of a Christian TV program that we're putting out there for some faith-based streaming TV stations on Roku. And one of the last shots we had to make to complete the show was down by a train close to where we live. It's the exact train that was in the Polar Express. There's actually two of them that look like that. We have one of them here in town. But they use the blueprints to make the train in Polar Express from this train. So we're down by the train, and I say, okay, I'm going to get one last shot. Let me set up the camera. I want to get over here and take a good picture of you, my wife speaking in front of the train. And I go to put down the tripod, and the legs are right on the outside of a circle, a pentagram. Somebody spray painted right onto the sidewalk. Now, coincidence? I don't know. How many pentagrams do we see spray painted on a sidewalk? Another time was I was same program. I was trying to shoot. I was in a church, and I was, for some reason I thought I got to check the sound on this. You know how you do. You know you got to have the sound. You can't, you know, just have video. So I check the sound. I do a playback, and no sound. So I go over there and I turn on the microphone, the shotgun mic, on a boom, just out of the camera view. I go back and I hit it, record, redo the take, and then I think I'm going to check it again. No sound. So I go over to the microphone. I look at it. It's been turned off. So I turn it on again. And I walk back, shoot, and I think, wait a minute, let me check this again. So I walked right over there, and it was shut off again. So I turned it, it's a switch. And it was really, it's funny because my wife and I both laugh that, you know, we know what you're doing. Okay, you're here, you're screwing around, we know what you're doing, but we're gonna get the take. And we got it, we got some sound. Another thing, the biggest thing was, is I got attacked during, now I'm going to sound like one of the loons out there. But I used to think these people were loony until I got closer to it. My mother passed away 2 years ago, this March 1st. And after she passed away, my father passed away a couple few decades ago. So losing mom made me an old orphan. But, you know, I was grieving, and I was sleeping on the couch. I came out here because I didn't want to toss and turn in bed with my wife, so I let her sleep. I'll lay on the couch, go to sleep out here until, you know, I feel comfortable. Well, I slipped into a dream, and it was one of those dreams where who's ever trying to tap your memory is picking up traces and stuff, but they're not quite getting it right when they reassemble it. So I'm in my mother's hospital room just, you know, when she died, and I'm there alone. The hospital room is a little incomplete, but I know it's recognized as a hospital room. And there's her bed off to the side. It's way in the corner. And there's nobody else in there. And I think, you know, I want to say goodbye to her one last time. And I thought, I'll go over there and give her a kiss on the cheek and say goodbye and leave. Well, I go over there, and I lean over her, and all of a sudden I get grabbed, and I'm under the sheet, and there's a space in front of me. It's like charcoal. I mean, it's black. It's like burned. It's like lava rock. And it's right in front of me, no glowing eyes or anything. You know, you think, you know, well, it's got to have glowing eyes if it's a demon. I don't know. Hey, but it appeared. And I think, that's not my mother. That's the devil. And he says, you're coming with me. And he grabbed me by the shoulders and started pulling me down. And I grabbed the side of the bed because I thought, in the dream, because you're not getting me. And he was laughing, saying, there's no hope for you. You're coming with me. And you can't talk. You know, go ahead, cry out. And I was, at that moment, I realized that I was in another place, that whatever it was, it didn't seem like a dream anymore. And I tried, I knew in my heart that I could get out of this simply by breaking out of whatever this was. And to break out of it, I had to reconnect with this world. And my wife was in the other room. Like I said, I was on the couch. But I started to cry out, help me. And I couldn't form the words. And it was like this entity had crippled me, paralyzed me so much. Not only was it hard to resist and fight him trying to pull me through the bed down into the world, I couldn't speak to save myself. So I started to say, help, help, help. And I thought, I've got to get this out. I've got to get my wife up, because if she is up, she's going to bring me back into the real world. She's going to shake me. She's going to do something, and I can snap out of this. I got to get out of this place. So she heard me making these noises and came out. And finally, I was able to audibly get out, "Help me, help me." And she woke me up at that moment. And right then and there, I realized that that was no dream. I've had dreams and nightmares all my life. This was an actual tying into the physical realm as well as the supernatural realm. And it was, you know, it was scary. But at the same time, it made me mad, because I thought, you're never doing that to me again. Never. Because I know who you are. I know what you try to do. And you're not coming after me again like this. Just not. But it wasn't until my wife heard me and came out here to see what was going on, and I finally started to struggle to put my voice to the words to scream out, "Help me." Because if she was able to snap me out of this, wake me, or whatever, I would return to this world. And I did. And it sounds like, you know, Scientology or something really weird, you know. what was the Apple White guy, you know, that Heaven's Gate and all that, you know. But this was pretty real for me. It was quite scary. But it made me angry, because then I realized, you know, this was real. This was real. This wasn't just a dream. It was something else.
Do you feel that once you had that experience, that opened you up for more strangeness with the paranormal?
Yeah. And but, you know, I'm kind of a logical person, so you know, like one night out in the living room here, you know, I'm in the living room, I'm watching some TV, all the lights are off, and I'm on the, we have black leather furniture, and I'm on the couch, and all of a sudden I see the recliner across the room moving, and it's tilting back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, and I'm going, it's moving on its own, what's going on here? So I got up, and then I noticed our black cat was sitting in it. She was grooming herself. But it wasn't like I'm going, oh, it's paranormal. You know, it's like, no, I would need to know what's moving this chair. When I found out it was a cat, then it's a cat. It's not paranormal. But I haven't increased in seeing things or anything like that. It's not like I've seen ghosts or whatever. But I do know that the demonic attacks are out there. And the devil doesn't come after people he's already got. You know, it's like the kid in the daycare center. You know, you run into daycare center, and all these other kids are—they're calm and they're happy and they're playing with the toys in the corner. Then you got the one that's resistant. I want my mom. I want my—you know—raising Cain. You know, you're not going to go after the kids that are happy and playing with the toys. You're going to address the one that's showing the resistance. So when you show resistance to evil and the demonic, and you know what it is, and sometimes you even speak out against it, it pushes back because it doesn't like to be revealed. And look at the end time, the end time scenario that everybody talks about. Are we in it? Are we not? I don't know. But I'll tell you this, if you watch the news, things going on, there's a lot of demonic stuff going on. You know, somebody that takes a gun and shoots 50 people, you know, injures 100 more at a concert, and, you know, that guy wasn't dealing with a full deck. I mean, did the devil possess him and pull the trigger? I don't know, but I know it's not a good act. You know, there's a lot of this stuff going on, the church shooting that took place. You know, and look at the whole Hollywood deal that's going down, all the sexual assault and even some of the pedophilia claims out there and all this kind of, it's kind of like this part of our lifetime is becoming a big reveal. It's like pulling back the veil on a lot of evil. And some people don't recognize it or care to brush it under the rug. But when you're tuned into it and you're keen to it and you speak out against it, that evil will come after you. It'll come after you to any way it can. It'll try to get to my wife. to make her down or to make her discouraged or, you know, it can be anything. It could go after my kid.
But you've got this fascination. Do you think that because of your fascination, that opens you up more spiritually to dark attachments, possession, yeah, that kind of thing?
I actually know what you're talking about. It's really not a fascination. I think people that are really into this actually practice it. I mean, they go out, they are involved with it. They encourage it. I'm not encouraging it. I'm just kind of like this. I'm not fascinated with it. It is interesting to ponder because it's something beyond your realm, but I'm not fascinated with it. I'm acknowledging it. It's kind of like, this is the fact of the day. And I think when you acknowledge it and you're aware of it and maybe you speak out against it, then you become more of a target. So it's not like, well, if you look at the rocking black chair long enough without getting up to see if there's an animal sitting on it, you know, if you look at it long enough, you can make yourself believe that it's paranormal.
Right, and I understand that. And that's what we try to do with people is walk them through on the show and with their own experiences. Not everything is as it always appears. And, no. You know, it can be. There can be very subtle things that are making it appear paranormal when it is not. So that is something I'm a big believer in. But you're still fascinated by all this. And you know, talk to me a little bit about I know you'd said aside from Valentino's ghost and the rest, you know things about curses, witchcraft, and so on. Tell me a little bit about some of the bump-ins. What is your honest belief and thoughts on things like curses?
Well, you know, I talked to missionaries that have worked in third world countries, and one of them was I had a voodoo curse put on him for death, and he went to a tribal leader to have it lifted, and when you sit down and you talk to these people, they're dead serious. I mean, they're not messing around. They realize that, you see, it's the dark arts, like dark, like your radio show, your podcast. It's dark matter, and it's darkness. In fact, when I talked to an exorcist that was out in California, he's an archbishop, he called it continuously the darkness. When you go to the darkness, you know, so you got the great title on your podcast there, okay? But it's like you become more aware of it. You become more tuned into it. And as an example, you asked me earlier about, like, ghosts. Are they manifested a creation of the devil as a deception, or are they really linked to an actual person that once lived? I don't know. One example I can go into, you know, I've written other books. I want to tell you the story of Fred Holman. He was a serial killer. I wrote a book on him. It's called Serial Killer in Ford County. And Fred Holman lived in our town of Grand Haven here in Michigan for about 8 years before he moved on. And he buried his wife and first child here. They're in the cemetery. He gets remarried, and then he goes off to Wisconsin from Michigan, and he starts beating his second wife. In fact, they ran him out of town here because he was beating on his wife, and the Lutheran church ran him out of town. They said, get out of here. So he took his wife with him, and they went over to Wisconsin. Well, he took to beating her over there. In fact, he threatened her. He took a dog and hung it in front of her, said, I'm going to do this to you. And then he almost beat her to death. So he went to jail for that. Well, when he gets out, he becomes estranged. He takes off. Never sees his two young children, and his second wife again. Well, that was about 1891. Well, by the time May 1st or May 15th, 14th, 1897, he's hung for being a killer at the Ford County Jailhouse in Illinois. And he had been killing women for several years, strangling them. And what was fascinating about that aspect concerning the paranormal was, and I'll briefly bounce through what he did. He went back and forth between Illinois and Wisconsin. And the police were finding women that apparently were committing suicide. You know, while their husbands were out of town, or husbands had gone to work or whatever, they would come back and find her wife dead. She had binding cord around her neck. She's hung from a doorknob, like her head suspended off the floor. A little rope around her neck, tied to the doorknob, tied to the bedpost. So it looks like suicide. So the police weren't onto him right away because these women were killing themselves. But then the police started to notice that there was a pattern. There's this guy named Frederick Holman that happened to be in town every time these murders took place, wherever it was, and he left the next day. So they eventually arrested him. They found enough evidence where they could prosecute him. And they got him. In my book, I named 5 women that he killed and a 6th without a name that I wasn't able to find. And it's rumored he murdered up to 17 by strangling. Now, this was happening a year after H.H. Holmes was executed. It was in modern terms, they call him America's first serial killer. He's not, but, you know, so this happened a year after Holmes was executed for his crimes. Well, so Holman goes on trial. He gets convicted. They tried him on one of the murders with the strongest evidence because they knew they got a conviction, they could hang the guy and get rid of him. So they did. They got a conviction. Well, then he makes statements to the press, and I got it out of the newspapers to put in the book, that, go ahead and kill me. You know, I'm going to come back. After I'm dead and gone, I'm going to come back. I'm going to come to your homes, and I'm going to tap on your windows. You will see my face. And he said things like this. Well, the jailhouse that he was hung in, Ford County Jailhouse, back in 1897, is still there. And recently, in the last few years, it's been taken over by a historical society and preserved. Well, a friend of mine down there, Terry Garlock, who runs Will-O-Wisp Paranormal, has investigated the place with his team, paranormal investigators, probably 6-7 times, and quite a few of those times I have listed in my book what they ran across. And the first time I got in touch with Terry, I found him online by accident. And it was about a week before he was going to investigate the Ford jailhouse for the first time because he had heard there had been a hanging there over 100 years ago. And they want to go in and see if they can stir it up, you know, maybe get a response, an EVP or whatever. So I found him online, and I contacted him, and I said, you know, I'm writing a book, and it's almost finished, and make a long story short, he didn't read the book. He didn't know what I had written. But then he comes back to me. I said, let me know what you find, because I might put something at the end of the book, because Holman threatened to come back after he was killed to haunt those, and even to get justice on those who sent him to the gallows. Get back at him. So let me know what you find there. And I didn't tell him anything about the history, so he hasn't read the book. The book's not even out yet. Well, he gets back to me on what he's found, EVPs, things that they saw, all this stuff. I was blown away. Because this book was hard to research. It was 3.5 years. 3.5 years. A lot of hands involved. Old microfilm, old photograph, little town newspapers that happened to be on microfilm that Terry Garlock, the paranormal guy, didn't have any access to. He didn't have any access to this. And he responds, what'd you and Vicki Craig and your team find at this during this walkthrough? And he said, this is a list of what we came up with. I was blown away. Because what he was talking about was in my book, and it was names that he didn't know about. Names that, it's not like H.H. Holmes. You could read some other reference book and go, okay, I'm going to act as though I know, you know, I haven't never heard of this before. I was writing a book. Nobody heard of the guy. He's not documented. He's nowhere out there. So he's an undiscovered serial killer. But he said, we got a name, Catherine. I said, well, Catherine was one of his victims, an old lady he killed, 73 years old, in Wisconsin. Said he came up, I heard, we got an EVP of Amelia, and he cared for her. Amelia was his first wife. In fact, when he went to the gallows, he said, you know, I hated his second wife. He said, but, you know, I want to go back, after I'm executed here in Illinois, I want to go back to Grand Haven to be buried next to my first wife, because she's the only woman I ever loved. He didn't know the woman's name. I mean, but he came up with a lot of this stuff. Now, what happened from that was a local news channel wants to do a piece, a video, little segment feature on my book for Halloween after it's been published. You know, because they've heard of the paranormal claim that this guy, you know, he's executed, and then he says, oh, I'm going to come back and get you guys, or I'm going to haunt the jailhouse. So they want to do a piece, fun piece, for Halloween. That's fine. So I agreed to it. Well, I didn't know they were going to go take it this far, but they decided we're going to get on the road. So the reporter and his cameraman get in the van, and from Kalamazoo, Michigan, go all the way down to Ford County by Gibson City and in Illinois and interview Terry and his team at the jailhouse. So they're in the jailhouse walking around like it's a paranormal investigation. And then after they conclude that, they get in the van, come back up here, meet me in the cemetery where his first wife is buried. So they can, you know, shoot some video of me talking about the book and the haunting claims that Frederick made and all this kind of stuff. Well, when the cameraman and the reporter got to us at the cemetery, I said, well, how'd it go down there? Was it fun? And he says, creepy. And the guy said, you know, it's like, never seen anything like this. There was stuff going on there down there that he says, I was never a believer, but I am now. And then the cameraman, I asked him, and he said, first thing that happened when I got in there was the camera went dead. Full powered. We had it powered up, went dead. I said, how many times has that happened in your career? He says, this is only once this time. So it even shook up a local TV crew where they went down and looked. Now, I've never been to the jailhouse myself. I haven't been down there, you know, but this paranormal team has investigated quite a few times. They even took a picture of what appears to be Frederick Holman, the serial killer, peering out the second-story window of the Ford County jailhouse, because the jailhouse was a house for the sheriff and a jail attached to it. So there was an upstairs. You know, back then, the sheriff would live at the jailhouse with his family. I can't imagine that now, where you have prisoners locked up down the hallway, but, you know, they did it.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, right. Daddy, there's a prisoner in my bedroom.
Exactly. Yeah, well, that was a lot of the way, and they would have the prisoners kind of moving it about, and sometimes the kids, the warden's kids would play in parts of the yard. It's very strange, but a long time ago, so thank God for some of those changes. I know we just briefly touched on it, but curses, as we're starting to wrap up here today, what do you believe about curses? Are they real? Do they exist, or are they only exist to those people that believe that they exist?
I think that they're real. They can be conducted. I don't know that much about the culture that does it, except that it's black arts and witchcraft. People that have been affected by it say it's definitely real. It's demonically done and conducted that way. So, you know, I know that the whole witchcraft thing is real too, because that is something that went on here in this county about 100 years ago or more. And right in the center of the county, there was a hot spot. I mean, they were doing everything. There was families where kids were claiming they were reincarnated. They were they knew where secret treasures were buried. They communicated with the dead all the time. In fact, there's this one whole town in the middle of our county. And, like, the local newspaper said that the sheriff should go out there and try to put an end to all this stuff, because it was just, they were freaking out there doing real weird stuff. But then there's the story about, I was asked to investigate, look into whether or not a pair of witches were buried at our cemetery. And make a long story short there, I finally found out their names, so I was able to locate the grave. And it was, one of the tombstones had a symbol on it that was an upside-down pentagram. Well, actually, it's the symbol The Ladies of the Eastern Star, I think it is. Her, you know, one of the ladies, her father was a Mason. So, you know, that's what, but that's another thing where you look into something, you think there's something there, and it turns out to be a nothing burger.
Exactly. Fascinating stuff, man. It's a pleasure catching up with you, and it was great that you touched on the serial killer aspect, as today is also True Crime Tuesday. And you guys can check that out, The Killing Game, the true story of Rodney Alcala, the game show serial killer. Our guest, Alan Warren, that's today. You guys are going to want to hear it. Very weird story. Plus, we talk about some corrupt justice on the show, too. You can get information by going to darknessradio.com and click on the True Crime Tuesday banner to sign up and never miss another minute of the best in true crime talk radio. And you can also find links to our guest book by going to darknessradio.com and click on the Killer Deals link. We'll also put up a link on our podcast today for that and a link directly to his website. So I want to thank you again for joining us today and spending a little bit of time with us. I love hearing this kind of stuff, Kevin, and it's a pleasure hearing from somebody who has different perspectives on this as well. So thank you for spending your afternoon with us.
Well, thank you, Dave, and it's been a pleasure.
Thanks. All right. Have a good one. Take care, everybody. We'll be back again tomorrow with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Your child deserves an education that sets them up for success. K-12 knows that learning isn't one size fits all and has options tailored to each child's needs, interests, and goals for the future. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn at their speed, at home, from state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.